It is time now for the Border News Roundup Friday mornings. We get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger, editor and publisher of The Timberjay, a newspaper serving northeastern Minnesota. Morning, Marshall. Thanks for being here.
Well, happy to be here, Heidi.
Let's start off with a story today, Marshall, about a new lawsuit having to do with mining. Now, this comes up a lot. How is this one different?
Yeah, this is a suit that's been filed by Northeastern Minnesotans for Wilderness. They're actually based in Ely, and they're the lead organization for the national campaign to save the boundary waters. And in their lawsuit, they're seeking to require the court to require the Department of Natural Resources here in Minnesota to go through a new rulemaking process to develop new state rules for sulfide or for sulfide-based mining, or you know, copper, nickel, or non-ferrous mining, I guess would be the more general term. And they're saying that they believe that as part of any rulemaking, that they would have to prohibit copper nickel mining within the Rainy River watershed. And that's a big watershed that covers a lot of northeastern Minnesota north of the Laurentian Divide. And the, you know, most of that watershed in Minnesota actually is already protected. It includes the boundary waters and also Voyageurs National Park. But some of the headwaters, which are, you know, actually to the south of the boundary waters, are not protected, and the Northeastern Minnesota for Wilderness is contending that you know, that because of that lack of protection, the boundary waters itself cannot be adequately protected. Now they're testing the strength of a 1971 law in Minnesota known as the Minnesota Environmental Rights Act, and this act actually grants, you know, members of the public the ability to file suit to protect water, air, and other natural resources from impairment. And so what Northeastern Minnesotans is contending is that any, you know, sulfide-based mine within the Rainy River watershed would not be able to protect the water quality and other you know, aspects of the boundary waters. Particularly, I think this is focused on the Twin Metals proposal, which is quite close to the boundary waters, just upstream along the Kuwishwee River. And so so this is going to be interesting to see, you know, how the court handles this. This particular law, there is some case law related to the MERA, as it's known, but, you know, not a lot. And so this will be certainly a lawsuit that, you know, tries to test, you know, the limits of that particular law here in Minnesota. And, you know, I should mention it's just one of a number of lawsuits that are, you know, going on at this point. There's another lawsuit that the Northeastern Minnesotans for Wilderness is involved with a number of other groups at the same time that are challenging the mineral leases for those that Twin Metals project. So there's quite a bit of litigation going on here. And, of course, there's a number of suits, as we've talked about, related to PolyMet. So, you know, it seems that this is the time now when a lot of these issues are heading into the courts.
Marshall, I don't know if you know this, but, you know, we're all businesses, all people are seeing the effects of COVID-19 on the economy and on themselves personally. How is the business of copper nickel mining doing? I mean, do they have funders? Are they still plowing ahead, PolyMet and Twin Metals?
Well, I mean, at this point, they certainly maintain that they are. I mean, one of the things I think has definitely been a big factor with the what's happened with the COVID-19 and the impacts on the economy, especially, you know, globally, is that commodity prices, including many metals, have, you know, declined in value quite a bit. And that's certainly a factor right now. I mean, you have, you know, copper is around maybe trading at about $2.70 a pound, you know, nickels in the $5.60 range, I think, a pound. And, you know, most of these mines, like PolyMet or Twin Metals, they're not profitable at anything close to these current prices. So, you know, it certainly is raising, I think, some concerns that unless things, you know, turn around and these metal prices start going back up fairly dramatically, that the prospects for some of these mines, I think, on just on economics are highly questionable. And it is notable, in fact, we even mentioned that in an editorial this week, that, you know, Twin Metals has not come out with any financial projections for the mine plan that it submitted to the DNR back in December. So we don't know, and I suspect that certainly at current metal prices, there's no way that that project is profitable. And, you know, people generally don't open mines that don't make money.
Right. Interesting to watch. We'll probably next week talk about another lawsuit. Who knows?
Possibly.
Well, the next couple of stories have to do with some projects that have gotten funding locally from the IRRRB. Let's hear first about an independent film that is making plans to be made and has to do with the Iron Range.
Yes. Well, one interesting project is an effort that's been going on for quite a few years by an independent filmmaker named John Montague, and he's a native Minnesotan, and he's been trying to produce a major, you know, motion picture as an independent film, and it's about hockey. It's set in Eveleth, and it's called Way of the Warriors, and it's kind of an inspirational story about a kind of down on their luck hockey team. You know, that had a great history, but has not succeeded in recent years. And they receive inspiration from their coach, who ends up with terminal illness. And so this is his last season, and probably, you know, he may not even survive the season. But they all rally, and of course, you know what happens. It's a heartwarming story, and of course the team, and with that inspiration, finds success. And you know, it sounds like it would be a great family movie. And you know, he had been successful in getting some funding for it, although it's been kind of a long struggle. And he did have a lot of the funding in place here recently, and then of course the whole COVID-19 situation hit, and of course that put any plans for filming on the shelf. And then as things were delayed further, he ended up you know, having to give back some of the money from investors because there was obviously uncertainty too. But now the project has gotten a jump start from the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Agency, and they've provided them $350,000, which is a shot in the arm that they need, which, according to John Montague, should help him now to go out and get the additional private investment that he's going to need to make this movie happen. And they hope to possibly be filming this in February of next year now.
Okay. And filming it here as well as it being about here?
Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It'll be filmed. And that's what he wanted. You know, he said they could have taken this to Canada and they would have saved a lot of money, because Canada does provide a lot of financial support for films. But he really wanted to do it right here. He wanted the movie to be as authentic as possible. So, yeah, it's going to be filmed on the range.
Okay. And another cool new thing happening, or update, is the Ore Bog Walk. Now, you have some ties to this bog walk. Tell us about it and how you were involved initially.
Sure, sure. Well, this was a project. It was actually the idea of a fellow named Mickey Elverum, and the bog walk is actually named for him. He was a science teacher at the Ore School back in the late 1980s and 1990s, and he had this idea for doing a boardwalk through an area of wetlands that were right next to a newly built visitor center, a log visitor center that was built right at the entrance to Ore, right on Highway 53, and that visitor center is now also their city hall. But anyway, this unfortunately, Mickey Alvrum, before he had the opportunity to design this bog walk, he ended up with terminal cancer, and he died, you know, within a relatively short period of his diagnosis. But the city at that time ended up, they asked me to do it, and so I did design it, and then it was built, and it's been in existence now since 1992, and it's seen better days, you know. I mean, we all get older, you know, and the Ore Bog Walk certainly has, and after almost 30 years with limited upkeep, it's definitely in kind of tough shape, but the city was looking at just, you know, taking it apart and being done with it, but they decided to look into rebuilding it. And, of course, the price tag for that went up a lot. I think we spent about $50,000 total building the bog walk back in 1992, and today the price tag is about $400,000. So quite a bit more, but it turns out they got the funding, and they weren't 100% sure they would, but they got about almost $200,000 from the IRRR, and they got a similar amount of money from a DNR Trails program. And so now they are ready to go ahead. And so this will be redone. And it's going to be, I think, a real nice addition. They get about 25,000 people a year who walk on that bog walk. You know, it's very accessible. And, you know, it's right off the highway. And it's a really interesting area because it's about a half-mile-long boardwalk, but it goes through four different wetland types. You start out in an ash, black ash swamp, and then it goes into a tamarack, black spruce swamp for a little ways. Then you go into through an alder thicket, which is kind of cool, and then you come out along this river, the Pelican River, and that's a floating section of the bog walk, and that's really neat there. I mean, there's great bird watching there along the Pelican River, and then it goes back into the tamarack and spruce forest. So you get to see you know, all these different wetland types, and it's a great place to bird because of that diversity of wetlands in there. And I've led birding trips over the years on there, and so it's definitely good. Also, it's a nice place in July to see purple-fringed orchids. They're often blooming along a portion of the trail. And at various times, there have been, you know, pitcher plants and things like that in the spruce bog area. So, and of course, they kind of come and go. But along the river, it's a really good place to bird. There's pelicans there you can see, and, you know, a lot of different types of grebes. I've seen sora rails and things like that, and then lots of different, you know, waterfowl. So, yeah, it's definitely worth taking some time to walk on that bog walk. And right now, like I said, it's a little rough. There's some spots where it's spongy and places where some of the signage as well. We had interpretive signage along the way, and some of that's gotten overgrown. So we'll be redoing the interpretive signs as well. And so when it's all done, people are definitely going to have to check it out because it's definitely worth the time.
Yeah, and I think right now and into the foreseeable future, people are getting out a little more and wanting day trips to places. And it's easy to find, you said, right, at the entrance to the city of Ore?
Yeah, there's a sign. Yeah, it's right when you come into Ore. You'll see a big visitor center there with it's a log building right on the left-hand side of the road. You just pull in there, and there's signage for the bog walk, which starts right at the parking lot.
All right. It's Marshall Helmberger. This has been the Border News Roundup. You can read and see more and sign up for a subscription at timberjay.com. Marshall, have a great weekend. We'll check in next week.
Sounds great. Thanks, Heidi.
Thank you.